We do have a quorum, so I will call the meeting to order. And Representative Erickson, have you read over the minutes?
Madam Chair, I looked at them, so I hope that looking at them means I can move approval.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Move approval of minutes. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. Members, we have another short agenda today. We are going to make our final bonding committee recommendation and go through the results of our prioritization from yesterday. And then we'll have work group reports from the work groups that we had during the interim. And then if we get done early, we will adjourn. But we have plenty of time for the bonding bill that we'll start out with. And I will move House File 2558, which is the Representative Murphy bill that will be our omnibus bill. And I'll recommend that 2558 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Division with a recommended referral to the Capital Investment Committee. And then in order to get the bill in shape with not just being the library bill, but being the recommendations from our committee, I will move the DE4 amendment. That is, it's in your packet. It's the delete all amendment. And it includes, along with the pink sheet that you have, the final tallies into high, medium, and low that Ms. Patrick tabulated for you after yesterday's meeting. So does everyone have that amendment? Any discussion? Okay, hearing none, those in favor of the motion to move the DE4 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Okay, we'll first have Mr. Strom go through the language of the bill, and then we'll have Mr. Crow go through the pink sheet. So first, Mr. Strom. And you can ask questions as he goes along.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, the document DE4 is this year's recommendation from the K-12 committee onto the bonding committee. This approach is slightly new this year. In some past years, the committee has sent the individual bills off to the bonding committee. In some years, the legislature has set a separate memo off to the bonding committee with priorities in them. Additionally, the bonding committee's processes are slightly different this year. There's no requirement. In some years, there have been requirements that a project needs to be approved or need to be disapproved at the committee level in order for something to happen at the bonding level. Instead, what this year's recommendations from the chair of the bonding committee was that the language be assembled into one document, and with projects being rated as high, medium, or low, and then that document being forwarded on to the bonding committee. So the purpose of this amendment is essentially to bring to the bonding committee the recommendations of this finance division. With that, let me briefly run through the amendment for you. Section 1 is just the usual boilerplate language that goes with all bonding appropriations bills. Section 2 is the new priorities section that I just mentioned. These priorities that are listed are in one of three categories, in high priority, medium priority, or low priority. Those are the priorities that were assigned to the to each of the individual proposals that were heard by this committee. Madam Chair, you may want to speak a little to that procedure if you like, but essentially these are using those three categories, and after the members yesterday rated the project, the scores for each of those projects. When we go through the spreadsheet, we'll talk in more detail about each of those projects. Section 3 of the bill is the appropriation to the Department of Education. This bill makes appropriations to four different groups, rather, three different departments. The majority of the programs will go through the Department of Education. There's also direct appropriations to the state academies and the Perfect Center, which are administered by the Department of Administration from an appropriation point of view. And then finally, the energy loans, when we get to those, go through the Department of Commerce. In terms of those appropriations for the Department of Education, $86.69 million is the total bonding recommendation. And those consist of the ones, the projects listed beginning on line 2.6. Red Lake for $32 million, the Library Accessibility and Improvement Grants for $10 million, the Anoka Prairie Restoration at $240,000, Alden Conger at $950,000, the Northwest Hennepin Family Center at $3.5 million, United South Central School District at $20 million, Rushford Peterson at $20 million. So the total of those appropriations to the Department of Education were the $86.69 million. Then the energy grants on the bottom of page 3 of $5 million was appropriated through the Department of Commerce. For the State Academy projects, the projects that were listed totaled $6.3 million, including $2.7 for asset preservation, $3.3 for Mott Hall, $100,000 for the pre-design for the dorm to replace for Shet Hall, and $200,000 for the day treatment center at Pollard Hall. In section 6, starting on the bottom of page 4, is the $999,000 appropriation for the Perfect Center. In four chunks, for asset preservation, $355,000 master plan, $206,000 Delta dorm, $385,000, and the prefabricated shed for $53,000. Then Section 7, Madam Chair, is the language in the bill that the Ramsey County Library brought to our attention regarding the cancellations regarding the repayments of state bond proceeds when a facility is sold. This language is the same as you saw yesterday with the amendment added on lines 6.4 and 6.5. Essentially, this would apply to any political subdivision, not just libraries, and if the state bonds proceeds that funded a portion of the project were $100,000 or less, this would allow, once the state bond proceeds have been repaid and the facility where those bond proceeds were used is sold or otherwise converted, for the municipality to hang on to that money. So essentially, if the amount of state bond proceeds that went in is over $100,000, there'd be no difference from current law. Under $100,000, once the bonds are repaid, if the facility is sold, there would not be a recapture by the state. Section 8 is the language that accompanied the energy grant that was brought to the committee by Representative Taylor. And Section 9 is the boilerplate on the bond, $7 million out of the general bond proceeds fund, and $32 million to the maximum effort fund for the Red Lake School. So in summary, Madam Chair, the amendment, the DE4 amendment, includes the projects that this committee heard, and the projects are grouped according to high, medium, and low on the first page of that document, according to the ratings that were submitted by members yesterday.
Thank you, Mr. Krull. And before I ask if there are any questions for him, the process was that Shannon Patrick did sit down and assigned a score to high and a score to medium and a score to low, and then tallied them all up, and then we looked at the totals, and here's what they were. And it was pretty obvious where the cut points were between high and medium and between medium and low. And so that was, it was a pure numerical request. If anybody has any, or tabulation, if anybody has any questions on the process, you could ask me, and if you have any questions on the bill, you can ask Mr. Strom. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Strom, do we have access to a list of those properties that were either acquired or bidded partly with state bond proceeds that would now total less than $100,000?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I don't have a list. I'm not even sure really if the state has a good list of that or not. I suspect we will only hear about them in those circumstances where the essentially title search for the sale of the property shows that the state bond proceeds went into the facility.
Thank you. Okay, we'll take Ms. Representative McFarland, and then I forgot to have Mr. Crow go through the pink sheet. So we'll take Representative McFarland, and then we'll call on Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair, I'm just curious, since I'm new at this, was there any target that we have as a committee on this? And I also want to comment that I thought that the process was good, that we had some input.
Thank you, Representative McFarland. No, we didn't have any targets. And, you know, it's always my opinion, and when we look at the total bonding bill, I think it will be a lot of our opinions that almost everything in our committee is a higher priority than some things that get funded in other committees. So we always encourage the total bonding committee, you know, we have to prioritize, or they'll do it for us. But on the other hand, we think a medium in our committee is really an A++ in a lot of other committees and so forth. But we didn't have any targets. It's just, you know, we could pass them all on with no comment, but then we have no say. And we're the ones that heard the bills. And I think that this committee should be complimented. I think we did a very fair job considering, you know, what our statewide responsibilities, where is the need, and what will do the most good. And the other thing that we have to be aware of, and I think just looking at the votes that people did, and I've discussed this with some of the bill authors, and that is that for most districts, we count on them to be able to have bond referendums, and if some come to the legislature and some don't, and others funded it with their own taxes, you know, that always is something. If it's just a regular school, you know, if it's something like Red Lake has absolutely no property wealth, or, you know, Representative Hillstrom's committee community had an exceptional innovative project and they raised a lot of money to match it, which other proposals did not, and so forth. You know, it's just all things we have to factor in. Yeah. Representative Dominguez, is yours about process, in which case I would take it? Okay, so then we'll go to Mr. Crow. Mr. Representative Dominguez.
I probably might go to Crow, too. I was wondering on the process as far as high, low, medium. Are we taking all the highs and maybe not so many of the mediums?
Representative Dominguez, that is a process question, so I'll answer that one. We're spending them all a lot. And, you know, we can fight for everything on this list if we want to when we talk to the members of the bonding committee, and we should. You know, Representative Hillstrom is a very savvy legislator. She's working with the Senate and the House, and, you know, I think Representative Brown should be talking to her, you know, and we all continue lobbying. This is just, we wanted to prioritize so we could have a say, but everything is being forwarded on. And we should all lobby for all these things with the bonding committee members, you know, based on our preferences. Okay. Mr. Crow, I think I will go to you, and I'll go to anybody else. If you want to get on the list, but catch Shannon's eye. But in the meanwhile, Mr. Crow, if you could just run through the pink sheet.
Sure. Madam Chair and members, the pink sheet is pretty simple and just has a summary of the appropriations that are in the bill that Mr. Strong just went through. The project is named, and then the amount that was requested is listed in that first single column. Then there's an indication of whether the governor funded it, and if so, by how much. And then the final group of columns reflect the committee's priorities based on what's in the language and your voting sheet. So you'll see high, low, medium, then the amount, and then the difference between what was requested and what the governor recommended. And that's where you can see the dollar total, the $99 million in total, and the breakout by agency. I would note on line 11, the Department of Commerce appropriation is the Renewable Energy School Projects is rolled into the Department of Education section.
Okay. Representative Detmer.
Yes, Madam Chair. What is the rationale from going high, medium, low versus 1 through 16
I'm just curious.
Ransom debt, well, that would have been harder for Rep. Ms. Shannon to do, probably. And it would have been harder for all of us to do, too. I don't know if I could have done that or not. Thank you. Okay. Anybody in the audience that wishes to testify? Okay. Not hearing any, then I'll renew my motion that House File 2558 be recommended to pass, as amended, and be re-referred to the Education Finance Division with a recommended re-referral to the Capital Investment Committee. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay.
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill is recommended to pass, recommended to pass as amended, and be re-referred to the Education Finance and Economic Competitive Division with recommended re-referral to the Capital Investment Committee.
That's a long one.
Boy, good thing that's written down, or I'd be lost on that. Okay, unfortunately, Representative Dietrich is sick, and so she's had to go home, and we will not be able to hear about the permanent school trust fund from her. But I wonder if Representative, not to put you on the spot, but we know how quick and perky you are, so if you could tell us what you know about the permanent school trust fund work group and your trip up north.
Well, the first thing I can tell you is I got food poisoning on the way up there. So that was, I can tell
you. On the way or?
On the way back. Yeah. So
Miss Patrick
knows about that. So, and contrary to the rumors out there, I did not get the Iron Range flu. It was actually legitimate food poisoning. Madam Chair, we're not hearing Representative Dietrich's bill today, are we?
Representative Garofalo, and I am putting you on the spot, but you will be heard first in Representative Mariani's bill or committee. She has more than one bill, and you signed on to all of them. So they'll hear the policy committee, and then later on we'll hear the finance bill. So just say what you want about the general topic, and we don't need to put you on the spot with no notice. Sorry about that.
No worries.
I just found out 10 minutes ago that you went home sick.
Oh, keep me sharp. This is a good thing.
Our goal.
Among other things, right? my head's on transportation right now. I'm sorry. I just need to switch gears over to the permanent school fund. Basically, 10,000-foot overview. Back when our state was founded, there were two sections within each the township or 40 that was designated to be basically for the kids, and the proceeds from these funds were put into a permanent school fund from which the principal can never be eroded. However, the investment returns derived from that are dedicated to education. One of the opportunities we had on the way up there was to see how other states in the country address this issue. For example, in Utah, which I believe was the focus of the video, they have much more mineral rights that come from it. So the scheme, the apparatus they've put in place for that is much different than in Minnesota, where while there's many revenue streams for our land, it's more derived from timber sales as opposed to ranges. One of the more interesting proposals we heard from, I'm just checking the audience here. Okay. One of the more interesting proposals we had is that there is some of this land that is owned in the Brainerd Lakes area, and which would be eligible for, which would be at a point where residential development is moving upon it, and there were some people from a government agency promoting the idea that perhaps that agency could use the proceeds of residential development and have this agency get into development as using it as an investment proceed, which and we'll let the committee address that issue in the future, but one of the questions that was raised was whether any legislative approval would be needed for the DNR to enact this legislation, and their response was no, to which I responded, short of prostitution and gambling, what can't you have these proceeds from the permanent school fund come from, that there should be some sort of legislative oversight on that. One of the most important things we learned from the trip is that there's many different revenue streams this come in on. Timber sales, mineral sales, there's even up in the Iron Range. I think we were in the Iron Range. I know there's a fight over where the Iron Range begins and ends. There's actually a ski lift up there that was used. And I think what Representative, and I certainly don't want to speak for Representative Dietrich, but I think her intent is revealed in the legislation, is that right now the proceeds from this fund are being put into the general fund, or being given to education, but then education's receiving a general fund offset. So in reality, it's really not taking place. And there's a couple different ideas on how to do this, but the thinking is that the proceeds from the permanent school fund really should go to the schools, not be used as a general fund offset. And I think, speaking for myself here, it would be nice if whatever those proceeds were allocated to be done in a fair way, so that we're not having compression algorithms or concentration factors. It was really intended for all the kids in the state, and that those proceeds really should be used in that fashion. So that's the 10,000 foot overview. It was a nice trip. I enjoyed my visit to the Iron Range, even though I got sick. I think that's pretty much the 10,000 foot overview of it.
Thank you. Very good. Representative Hillstrom.
Madam Chair, do we know how much money we're talking about?
$20 million right now, but
per
that's
year?
The whole, per, is it per year or per biennium?
Per year.
And so, that's kind of the point that Representative Riccovino, who keeps encouraging us to look into this, likes to make, and that is that he tells us, and I'm no expert on this, but he said that the university also has a permanent school trust fund, trust lands, and they get money. They have less acreage than K-12, but yet they seem to have almost as much money as we do. And so the thought always is that the DNR uses our K-12 money to leverage other money, and they make the case that if they didn't have mineral exploration, then we wouldn't get the money that we get from the minerals, and so they need that, but somehow for the university, they don't put those kind of accounts into a place, and that we could probably, if we were watching it better, earn more money for the schools, and we would watch it better if it was dedicated to something. So that's kind of the thinking, and we'll see what they bring forward. I'll just say, before I call on Representative Anzels, Ms. Patrick has informed me that it's Thursday next week that Representative Mariani's policy committee looks at her policy bill, your policy bill. And then next, the week after that, this committee will look at it, and we'll also have in the State Board of Investment and the DNR, so we can hear some of the information that the committee heard. So Representative Anzels and then Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The representative did a great job of snapshots of a very complicated topic. My only addition to the discussion is the permanent university fund is much more defined, much more easily detectable and traceable back to mining development and mining activity, scholarships provided, endowed chairs, and so on. What we on the Iron Ore Formation get concerned about is that the permanent school fund portion of minerals activity just sort of gets lost and very difficult to trace, and we rangers have a very difficult time explaining to you all that it's minerals development and permits and activity on the Iron Range that benefits every single school child in every single school district. So that's why we would like to better define that portion of it.
It's a good thing we have one of our own rangers on the committee to help us with all this history. Representative Garofalo.
Just a quick question. So, Mr. Strom, do you know what the size of the corpus is right now?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I think it's around $700 million or thereabouts.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good job. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo, I'll put you on the spot. I was supposed to be on that trip too, but I had a conflict, so I'm sorry I missed it. But is the language to which you refer in the Constitution, or is it in statute, or is it both? Or could you just remind me of how that is set up?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, of course, I always want to preface my remarks by saying I want to give myself the opportunity to refresh my recollection in case I'm wrong. And My understanding is that it's both, that there is a constitutional dedication for this money, specifically in the area of the corpus. We're not allowed to use the corpus.
Right.
However, I would have to assume that there is statutory language guiding this program as well. My understanding is that it's both. The language that Representative Beatrick is bringing forward is regarding the statutory side, where one of the ideas, for example, would be to have these dollars go into technology assistance, where it was, you know, given out in a specifically for technology, a long-term investment for schools.
Commander, here, Representative Garofalo, statutorily, does it separate K-12 from the U of M?
Director Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, again, I would assume that it does, but I would have to read it and double check.
Representative Mr. Stramas, or Mr. Crow is shaking his head that you're right.
Oh, well, then that's a yes, then. Two for two, then.
Okay. All right. And then we'll go to Representative Dominguez, whose work group, or actually your subcommittee that you already have, looked into updating the desegregation rule. And Ms. Patrick said you may not even know yet, but it looks like the policy committee will be looking at your bill on the 28th, and then we'll have it here for the financial parts after that. But if you would like to give a brief overview, a preview of what your bill will be.
Well, thanks, Madam Chair. I really wasn't prepared to do that, but I'll certainly try. The integration revenue bill is going to be heard. I just heard the date. I thought it was next week, but I guess it's the 28th now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to go to Mariotti's first in the policy. And what the revenue bill is about is putting in some standards and guidelines that the work group worked on in the interim. We've heard from the districts, we heard from the department, we heard from witnesses that came forward about the integration funding, and we hope to move it forward. We're not talking about any money, we're talking about some guidelines here, and we're talking about things that the integration revenue was supposed to be spent for. A lot of the districts had different ideas. And so with this policy enforcement, we're going to put in some things here that I think I hope folks would like. I'm getting some feedback that some of the things are not too good, but I think we're going to have to work with those. But we worked hard in trying to figure out how to push this bill forward, and with the help of the chair, of course, Mindy Greiling, and others, that sat on the committee, we are going to move forward and then hear the bill. Again, we've got a lot of folks that came and talked about the bill, had a lot of discussion from throughout the state, in fact, and we welcome the confidence that we hope to get to pass this bill. So that's just a update, and so we'll go from there.
Thank you very much, Representative Dominguez. And we will, the bill actually, because you mentioned that it won't include money discussion, we'll talk about the money. There is a money proposal in it, but you're right, we aren't probably going to get any money anytime fast this year for it. But right now we spend about $62 million on DSEG, and the proposal is to spend another $30 million more so that it would be more fairly spread out based on need, because the formula has gotten outdated, with mostly being geared towards the needs back in the late 60s and early 70s, and times have changed since then, and a lot of greater Minnesota districts and suburban districts have needs now as well. So thank you very much, and we'll look forward to more discussion on that. And the final item on our agenda and the final work group is Representative Faust, who talked about school facilities. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would encourage Representative Benson, Shannon, Tim, Greg, or anybody else who's at these to throw their two cents in as well. I guess that the thing to, one of the first comments we heard from one of the superintendents at one of the hearings was that I don't know what the right answer looks like, but I know for sure it isn't what we're doing today. And I think that really summarized really well what we heard over and over again, almost everywhere we went and from almost everybody we heard from. The system that we currently have just really doesn't do much, and so I think that we need to look at some serious changes there. some of the ideas that we came up with, and I won't get into a lot of detail onto them, but if somebody wants to discuss them in more detail, we can sure do that. But one thing that struck me when the library group was here is they said, we're $160 million behind in library projects, and yet nobody has a clue where we're at with building projects for schools. Nobody knows at all. I mean, we might be where we should be, or we might be hundreds of billions behind. We don't have a clue. So the first thing we wanted to do was to send out some kind of information gathering to the school so we could get an idea where we're really at. Another issue that came up was elevators. That if a school has an elevator and they've changed codes on elevators now, we found out, and health and safety money cannot be used to remove elevators or even take them out. And I believe that Shannon is doing some work with the department to hopefully fix that. With? Greg is. Okay. So hopefully he's got that straightened out for us. But that was an issue that came up a couple places. So another issue, and I'm just going down the list, which isn't any special order here, is building design. Right now, approximately 6% of every building project is going into the design of the school. So if you've got a $30 million building project, almost $2 million of that is going into designing the building. And it seems to me that across the state of Minnesota, we should be able to consolidate that somehow and reuse some of those plans over and over again and save the state an awful lot of money by using plans in more than one building project, because right now everyone gets their own designer and it's totally different. So you've got an issue of local control, so we probably need more than one set of plans, but I think that we should be able to become more efficient on that. Back to the, then I guess the other thing that we want to do is we need to look at using some equalization, which we've had in the past for building projects, and the problem is that it just hasn't increased for inflation lately. And if we do that, if we increase that for inflation, the problem still is that we've only got so many dollars, and so I think the state needs to do some type of prioritizing so that a school may be able to get a levy through, especially if it's equalized, but there might be a building 6 miles away that would work just as well, another district that's half full. And so I think the state needs to do some kind of prioritizing so that the highest needs are the ones that are getting the help first. So that some people thought was a little bit of a controversial issue because you get into local control. I don't see it that way because you can still build it yourself if you want to, but if you want state equalization, I think that you should have to play by the state's rules. Another issue that came up is we thought we should decrease the importance of the square footage requirements of the acreage that a building sits on. Representative Junkie is bringing forth a bill to allow Wilmer School District to build a school on a site that doesn't have the acreage requirements that the state says it should. And the state says, well, it's really just a recommendation, but they stick pretty, they put a lot of weight on that recommendation, and we need to find a way to at least reduce that weight, and I'm not sure how to write the rules to do that, but that needs to change. Another thing that we talked about is increasing the levy limits to allow the least levy limits. That's an issue for some districts, and also allow for office leases to be used. Right now it can only be for classrooms, and for a lot of districts it's a lot easier to find office space to rent than this classroom space, and yet they can't do that. The last thing I've got on my list is alternative facilities, and there are a lot of changes in that we wanted to look at, and if I can put Tim on the spot and explain what that is, because it was something that I really had never heard of, even though I'd been on this committee for a year, and so when we started talking about that, we really had to get up to speed on what it was, and then we looked at, okay, is this really the way it should be? And so if you would explain that briefly, I would appreciate that. So thank you.
Madam Chair, in 1993, the legislature split off the larger school districts from the health and safety program and allowed them to do a levy through the deferred maintenance or alternative facilities program. The big difference, of course, was that they could do deferred maintenance, which was not allowed under health and safety revenues. There were about 18 school districts in the state that qualified for that program, and there were two criteria: age of their facilities and square footage of their buildings. The initial bill passed with a requirement for 15 years of an average age of the building and 1.825 million square feet of building space. That was subsequently amended to allow districts with building age of 35 years or older on average and 1.5 million square feet to qualify. And then additionally, two extra school districts were added by special legislation. So those make up the districts that are in that group that qualify, and it's essentially a world of those that are in the program can levy for any of their deferred maintenance needs. If a district's not that large or old, they can't levy for any of their deferred maintenance needs without going to the voters. The Representative Spouse Committee investigated a variety of changes to that program that would spread that levy authority out among more school districts.
Thank you very much. Representative Spouse.
Thank you. Yeah, I guess there were several things that we'd like to take a look at bringing bills forward this year, but even more as we go down the road next year, the year after, and maybe even 3 or 4 years, because a lot of them require a lot of dollars, and so we need to find the right time to try to push them and get them adopted. So, but thank you very much. It was a good process, and I think we all learned a lot.
Thank you, Representative House, and I think all the work groups worked hard. And then the fourth one I'll just briefly say is the Education Finance Reform Task Force. Representative Farland, Representative Dabney, who am I reading on? Representative Morrill, right over to my right, I can't even see him, and Representative Heidgerken were on. And we are meeting, in case you all didn't know, perk up your ears, we're meeting next Tuesday morning. You'll get a notification, if it's not already on your calendar, to go over the bill and the run. And so that is very important that all of you be at that meeting. And then we'll see if we still like what we've come up with or not. And if not, we'll keep working. And if so, we'll share it and get input, and we'll have the bill introduced. And then we'll have the public hearings, and a lot of our friends will still be our friends, or they won't, and we'll go from there. And then tomorrow we will be having a joint hearing with Representative Mariani's committee at this time in this room to go over the special education rules that are a result of Representative Hilstrom's bill from last year. And you may have been getting emails on it, both for and against. It's been a very controversial work group within the special education community. So we'll hear more about that tomorrow. I think you'll all be, because you're going to get a lot of input on it, and we need to decide what to do this year and what to continue on for next year, I urge you to be at the meeting and to try to catch all of it, because I think it's very important. It's very important because it affects real lives of special education students and their families. And it's also very important because anything we do that's above the federal standards that isn't absolutely essential to a really good education costs us money. And special ed is increasing, remember, at 5% per year. So we had our three-pronged attack for special ed last year. One, pay as much as we could of the bill. From 2003, we still owe $80 billion. Two, have earlier intervention through the Representative Faust's response to intervention, try to head some kids off and get help earlier. Prevention is cheaper, and early intervention. And then three was this one, to examine every single statute and rule that we have in our state of Minnesota that exceeds the federal IDEA. And that's very threatening to many in the special ed advocacy groups. And I think it's also, when I explain it to them, essential that we do, to justify the ones we do decide to keep above the federal standard. They've agreed on a few. They've argued over many. So that's, stay tuned for tomorrow. The meeting is adjourned.